Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Triple Click Palm.
Hello and welcome to our third episode of the Triple Click Home podcast. My name is Alina Roberts and I'm joined by Peter Bosley and Buddy Brannon. And we're going to talk to you guys about what's happening in the world of Apple.
Yay, Apple world.
Yay, Apple world. Yes. So we're going to start by letting you guys know that January 19th, Apple is going to be doing an event for who knows what, but the likelihood is that they're going to be changing the way that ebooks are published or created. But that's just a rumor. And we're going to talk more about that next month.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens in this event, if it really is centered around textbooks. The landscape is a very crowded one. And right now, Apple doesn't have much of a foothold in the textbook space. And they're going to be fighting an uphill battle with some other players out there. On the other hand, we're hopeful that if there is an announcement regarding textbooks, that we'll see continued focus on accessibility from Apple's part. The requirements around meeting K through 12 students' needs based on the various laws that govern that sort of thing are pretty strict. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out long term. But right now, pretty premature to really get into that too much.
It's perhaps premature, but it'll be interesting to see what Apple does with this. While they have a pretty good track record of sort of getting into a niche and then dominating it, like with, well, first it was with iTunes and music. They just completely changed music. And then the same thing happened with the iPad. It'll be interesting to see what happens with books because, well, iBooks was kind of not really anything that, well, it was great for us because it was accessible, and it's really the most accessible ebook thing out there for people who have an iOS device. But they haven't come anywhere close to dominating ebooks in the way that they have music and things of that nature. So it's going to be interesting to see if this is the thing that sort of turns the tide for them and puts them on that sort of on that footing with some of the other things that they've really innovated.
I have a hard time seeing textbook publishers in particular giving up their foothold anytime soon.
Oh, they won't.
And we also have to remember that for those of us in the technology field, it's easy for us to say, ooh, ooh, gadgets, new ebooks, et cetera, et cetera. But a large majority of the population has limited access to that sort of technology. So I think that the move to digital is going to be slow and painful, especially when it comes to the educational side of things. I hope that I'm wrong, but
oh, sure. Well, you're probably not wrong in the fact that publishing in general and textbook publishing in particular is going to be loath to give up the way that they're doing things because the way they're doing things now is very profitable for them. And let's face it, as human beings, we don't like things changing. They definitely don't want things to change. Going back to the music industry, look how the music industry got sort of dragged into this whole deal kicking and screaming. And it took a while, and it probably took longer than a lot of us would have liked, for example, for DRM to go away, for CDs to be going that direction, that sort of thing. A lot of that, yeah, that's going to take a long time, and the publishers aren't going to be willing to sort of change the way that things happen. So Apple's going to definitely have to do something very compelling as far as not just presentation, but you know, authoring and publishing and putting together the finished product. They're going to have to do something extremely compelling that's going to really capture people. Otherwise, yeah, they're not going to have a chance, really.
So the rumor is that it's going to sort of be like GarageBand for books, or maybe that they're even going to roll this into GarageBand. And what I think could come out of it, and this is totally me speculating, but it's possible that you could have smaller companies utilizing this feature, You could have teachers that have decided to put their curriculum into this format. So my kind of hope is that if we make it easy to use or more friendly, then we can get more teachers utilizing this as a tool, and maybe even put textbooks as a side note. Maybe we can just get rid of them altogether. Not that that's ever going to happen, but I can dream.
You're an ambitious thinker.
Well, but it's not really beyond the realm of possibility. Look how publishing, at least in the non-textbook space, really is changing and becoming sort of more democratized, again, like music, where anyone who wants to can get an ebook published. Of course, the flip side of that is anybody who wants to can get an ebook published. So there you go.
Along the notes, the side of books and ebooks, the Braille Monitor came out with an article that kind of looks at where ebooks stand in general for people with visual impairments. And it was a pretty fascinating read. I myself was really pleased to see Blio kind of get the ringer, because we got told months and months and months, this is going to be an amazing application and it's going to be so accessible and it's going to be so user-friendly. And
it was just so bad.
And I'm so disappointed.
Behind the scenes, their choice of Windows presentation platform on the Windows side of things was, I think, a large part of the accessibility issues that Blio has embodied. And the people that were behind this project, at least so far as I'm concerned, clearly didn't do their homework before they made that choice, because that particular platform is difficult to make accessible. Now, before people get on their horses to come over and burn me at the stake, make no mistake, I do not call that an excuse for what happened, but I do believe that there were some technical choices made before the design process was really thought out too far ahead. And by the time that they realized what kind of trouble they were in on that front, I would be willing to bet that there was hesitation to scrap things and go to a redesign, because they had already gotten so far in their development cycle.
It's a good read, and it's pretty fair and balanced on the whole. But it's a good, I think it's a pretty good assessment and overview of what's out there and where things are stacking up right now.
This month is the 5-year birthday of the iPhone.
Yep.
And when you think about 5 years, in the tech landscape, 5 years is such a long time. But if you talk about where we were 5 years ago, it seems like it was such a long time ago. We were still using Motorola Q-style Windows mobile devices then.
You kidding me? What did I have 5 years ago? I think 5 years ago I still had a Symbian phone.
I never had a Symbian phone.
5 years ago, I had a flip phone that allowed me to make phone calls.
Whoa!
I know!
Wait.
I couldn't even read the caller ID.
What is this phone call of which you speak?
It doesn't seem like people don't talk on the phone very much anymore.
Wait, you can do that?
I find that a disturbing trend, honestly. I'm not that old, but I think that, like, our generation seems to be like all about, well, I'll text you. I don't really want to talk on the phone. And so they'll go on and have these long text conversations. And it's like, you know, you could have had this conversation. It took us an hour to have over text message in 2 minutes on the phone.
It's an interesting point.
Yeah, my rule with texting is it's only if it's going to be a few things back and forth. And that's the only time I use it, because, yeah, really, I should just call them.
Have any of you seen the long strings of Twitter mentions back and forth? And then, you know, sometimes yes. You'll have people that mention 10 people in a tweet, so they only get the right 2 words per tweet.
Yeah, you got like 10 people in the string, and then you have like 3 characters left to say something.
Yes.
Yeah, those are awesome. But as far as the iPhone coming out 5 years ago, who would have thought? Well, I'm sure that someone at Apple thought, but who would have thought that it would come to where it is now? 5 years ago, there were no apps, and the phone was very expensive, and you couldn't get it on a reduced price contract. there were no apps, and I don't know that there were actually plans for apps until sometime later.
Right.
Of course, to us, it didn't really matter. It's not accessible. It's a touch screen. It's there's no way we're going to be able to use this thing. So a lot of us just dismissed it. I do remember, though, back then, there were people on the Mac Visionaries list. I'm thinking of Josh DeLioncourt right now, who were saying, oh, yeah, sure, Apple is probably going to make it accessible at some point. They could do it this way. And come to think of it, the way that Apple did it ended up sounding an awful lot like the way Josh DeLioncourt proposed.
He should see if he can get paid for that.
Yeah, right? Well, he's probably already getting enough, told you so mileage out of it. But anyway, yeah, so, you know, you drag your finger around the screen, and when you get to what you want, you tap on it again. I mean, it ended up being a lot like how he said that he thought it would be done. The most we'd been doing with touch screens up until 2009, when the 3GS came out with VoiceOver, was Code Factory's implementation, where they divided the touch screen up into what amounted to four great big buttons that did different things depending on how you pressed and tapped and held on them. So it was quite innovative, and a lot of us were very skeptical. I was pretty excited. Of course, since I had had a lot of experience with iOS up till then, I was pretty confident that if Apple came out with accessibility, it was going to work. Had I not had that experience, I think I probably would have been in the same, oh, well, this isn't going to work. This isn't going to be accessible. This is a publicity stunt at best. It's going to be token accessibility, so on. And so I might have been in that camp myself. Fortunately, people who were in that camp were proved wrong. And I have been amazed at the people who are getting iPhones. There are people getting iPhones that I would have never thought would get an iPhone. And I don't just mean technology people. I mean more people that don't do technology, that are friends of mine that are, if not technophobic, certainly not tech friendly, and then they've got iPhones. So I think that's just fantastic, and that's a pretty far way to come in 5 years.
And if you think about it, we've only had the iPhone for, you know, 2.5 years.
Right.
So, you know, the pace at which things have moved for us in the blindness community has been just even more unbelievable. So I think a lot of times we get caught up in the minutiae and we don't realize how much things have changed for us and how much we really have to say, hey, things aren't perfect here, but we've come a long ways. And I say the same thing about Android at times. And I don't know, I don't want to bring up the age old, you know, iPhone versus Android thing, but a lot of times I look at things and we say, hey, you know, Google, you need to get on this. And sure, they do. But Android hasn't been on this steep development curve quite as long as the iPhone has. So patience is a virtue. And it's not one that I personally possess either, but worth thinking about.
So next up in our discussion of the news is that Comcast now has a streaming application for the iPad, if you are, I believe, an Xfinity subscriber, one of those fancy people with digital cable. And however, apparently it's not accessible. I think the sources are in that, no, it's not user-friendly. And you know, honestly, their Comcast app on the iPhone, which I tried to use so I could look at the television listings in my area, not user-friendly at all. So am I surprised that their iPad app is not friendly? No. No, I'm not.
I gotta say, the one for Dish isn't bad. I mean, it could be better, but it's usable.
Well, this is a shout-out to any company out there who's providing me with entertainment that I possibly am paying for, Netflix. Could we please work on it being friendly to VoiceOver users?
I think this goes back to some of the things we've talked about in the past, about the way iPhone and iPad apps are accessible out of the box.
Yeah.
We're starting to find now that a lot of big companies are hiring consulting companies or contractors, if you will, to develop their iOS applications. And these contractors, a lot of times, are using development tools. So they're not building things using UIKit, which is the Apple-provided user interface design tool. So what you have is a developer who has written some code and ported it over and not bothered to programmatically expose their interface elements with the proper accessibility data, and you have an app that isn't accessible. And as the iOS development landscape marches on, if we're not careful, what we'll see is a lot of other third-party development tools coming along that says, hey, if you've got an Android app, you can port it to the iPhone. Just copy it over and fix these two little things, and you'll have people using custom interface elements that aren't labeled.
Well, and we also talked about the accidentally user-friendly for blind users, because a majority of the cases, the app developers probably have no idea, or maybe they just don't think about it. And so, you know, when I go to an app and 75% of it works, but not the other 25 that I need to work, that's when I go, maybe this is accidentally user-friendly.
And that really makes a lot of sense, because as evidenced by some recent press coverage that comes to mind, it's not generally known or even expected that blind people and people with a visual impairment can operate an iPhone. So I don't think it's anything that people would really give a lot of thought to.
It'll be interesting to see if we can convince any of these big players, not just the TV folks, but things like magazines and newsstand that we talked about last time. If we can convince any of these big players to make their app accessible. So far, I haven't been able to do that.
Yeah.
And as a community, I don't know that any of us have really made too much progress. We've tried, but you know, it seems to be players like Pandora or, you know, Tweetlist or smaller shops that tend to be more responsive about that sort of thing. I have yet to really hear from a big company, unfortunately.
So speaking of big companies, Target is going to be getting 25 mini Apple stores put in this year, which is pretty exciting. It will mean that it's more convenient. Target already sells Apple-related devices or Apple-compatible devices. Be great if one of those 25 stores was anywhere near me, but I don't think I'm going to be that lucky.
Amen.
My nearest Apple store is 2 hours away.
Yep, same here. I've got three. I've got Erie, Pennsylvania is approximately the same distance from Buffalo, Pittsburgh, and Cleveland, and then we've got Apple stores in all three. Nothing in Erie.
Would you believe we have two Apple stores in Columbus, Ohio?
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yep. I wonder how these stores are selected, what the criteria they use to select the particular locations that are going to get mini Apple stores inside of Target's.
This is an interesting move on a couple of fronts, because one of Apple's major strengths is their retail stores.
Uh-huh.
And Apple sells hardware, keep in mind. And so their retail operations are all geared towards selling you a bunch of hardware when you walk in. So the question is, with their proliferation of third-party resellers such as Target, Walmart, Best Buy, et cetera, are they going to dilute their retail brand, or are they going to start sending Apple employees to these little mini stores to kind of keep up the level of service that people have started to expect from Apple retail locations?
So basically what you're asking is the Apple mini Apple retail store going to be sort of just something like a counter full of Apple stuff that's officially Apple sanctioned, but that's about it? Or is it going to be kind of like you have your Subway or your McDonald's inside of the Target or Walmart or whatever?
Right.
I'll be interested to see how this impacts actual Apple resellers. And when I say that, we don't have an Apple store anywhere nearby, but we do have what's called the Mac store, and they are a certified reseller of Apple products, and they're allowed to work on certain products for technical support and things of that nature. And they're a really great place, and they're not the official Apple store, so there are things I cannot get there, which is very unfortunate. But they have a lot of offerings, and they're a great local business. So I hope that these little mini stores in Target don't cause the small businesses that are actually certified resellers of Apple products to go out of business.
I would really have trouble believing that they would, because Apple is so tightly controlled end to end. It strikes me that they know where all of their official resellers are, and they don't. I don't think they have a bunch of them.
Yeah, you're probably right.
So it seems to me that they wouldn't put something in that would threaten one of their long established dealers. One thing about Apple, say what you will about how they approach their hardware and the whole walled garden versus open thing and so on and so forth, but everything that I've read suggests that Apple really takes care of their people, and it strikes me that doing something to undercut a long-time relationship wouldn't be really taking care of your people.
I don't know about that. Don't kid yourself. If they think that it'll benefit them, they'll cut your arm off.
Oh, well, okay, yeah, but if they've had a long-standing relationship with a particular company, it is probably a good reason for it.
I don't know that that's true, because the store I grew up going to for all of my Apple needs before Apple stores even existed was put out of business thanks to the official Apple stores coming into town. So, you know.
Yeah, well, there's that. I'm thinking of people like Small Dog, for example, in Vermont, where there are no Apple stores.
Yeah.
You know, someone like that, I don't think that Apple would really go out of their way to sort of alienate, because it's a pretty established presence. And yeah, I don't know anything about the store in question either. And so there are probably a lot of things that we're not privy to, and I expect at least some of what's going to send a store packing is going to be what kind of service they've provided up to the point that they go away. Of course, that's true regardless whether you're talking about Apple or any other kind of thing.
Our next story is about Siri presumably doubling the iPhone data usage. Now, personally, from a technical standpoint, I really don't think that's realistic or possible. But what do you guys think?
I think somebody's fudging some numbers somewhere. I tend to agree with you, and especially because, as we've discussed before, it doesn't appear that they're actually sending raw data up to be interpreted, but they're sending up something else that's smaller. If it is true, it's probably because everyone is playing with Siri and asking her what she's wearing or something like that. Once the novelty of that wears off, things may settle down.
I kind of think that if anything, people are using their phones to do things with Siri, and they're using more data, searching things, you know. From my perspective, if you're using Siri enough to actually double your data usage, I would like you to go get a life. I don't know. It sounds harsh, but
yeah.
That's a lot of Siri data.
Exciting news on the OS X front is that there is a recent blog post that talks about Firefox becoming accessible with VoiceOver. Now, this is something that many people have been wanting for years and years and years, and although Safari is pretty cool and it has some great things going for it, you know, especially people who've transferred over from the Windows side of things, I think, have gotten used to Firefox and its usefulness, and have wanted to use Firefox or have an alternative to WebKit-based browsers on the Mac, and that's not available right now. So they are working on it. The blog post says that, you know, we don't have any definitive information about when it's going to come out or when it will be available, but they're hoping that beta testing will happen sometime soon. And so that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, we're watching this with some interest because, as the blog post says, that we're linking to in the show notes, as the blog post says, there was an effort towards this begun in 2006, but it stalled for various reasons, and we've had promises of, well, we're going to start working on it again, and so on and so forth, and it's kind of been going along in fits and starts, so this is really the most promising news on that front that we've seen in a while, so I'll be interested to see where it goes and what we see in a couple of few weeks. Yeah, there you go.
We also have an article talking about Mr. Wozniak, co-founder of Apple, talking about the ups and downs of iOS versus Android. And it seems to be that his consensus is that the iPhone is pretty cool and it's very useful, but he thinks his Android does a lot of things better than the iPhone. Any comments, boys?
I kind of wonder what kind of context this was taken out of, because it seems from the structure of the article to be a bit strange in how it's sort of brought forward. So that having been said, this is kind of one of those age-old arguments. This is the Windows versus the Macintosh argument. This is the Braille and Speak versus the...
I think you're going for Braille Note versus Pac-Mate.
Braille Note versus Pac-Mate. Sorry. Okay, yeah, that's probably more like it. But, you know, at the end of the day, a choice of a mobile platform boils down to what do you do with it on a daily basis? And does this piece of technology work for you? Does it meet your needs? Do you use it to its fullest, or do you use it for the things that you need to use it for? And are you, you know, happy with it? People that are in the tech field, we can go back and forth all day, all night, all year long. And in the end, none of that really matters.
The funny thing about this is that, like you said, the article's strange. It kind of goes back and forth. Well, the iPhone's his primary phone. However, he feels that Android has these particular strengths. Well, while Android has these particular strengths, he feels that the iPhone is better for most people. So it's funny, you could make any headline for the comments that you want to, really. It sounds like he kind of wanted to be on both sides of every issue, in a way. But the arguments in his comments are really nothing new, nothing we haven't seen already, or arguments we haven't already heard before. I think that the newsworthy bit about it is sort of the irony that the co-founder of Apple, who is no longer associated with Apple, finds merit in a competing product.
Yeah, no, I'm with Peter, though. I mean, it really does come down to what is it that you need out of your mobile phone? And does the operating system and the hardware fit your needs? If it doesn't, switch to something else. If you want consistency, go with Apple. If you want the option of multiple different kinds of handsets, then go with Android. Or go with Windows Mobile, or whatever the case may be.
And there's certainly good points in the article. There's certainly flexibility in the way you can do things with Android that isn't there with the iPhone. But again, that is at the expense of a consistent or mostly consistent user interface. So, absolutely agreed, 100%. It depends on what you want and what you need for your technology to do for you. And I think that he sort of said that in a more roundabout way.
Yep. So our final news is to let you guys know that Apple and iOS-related things were multiple parts of the Blind Bargain's top 10 news of the year. And if you want to learn about those, please visit the show notes and also listen to the Saraspective's review in Technology Show that aired last month.
And there will be links to that in the show notes.
I think the top news item there was really, or at least in my mind, was Steve Jobs passing away. And I've said this before, and I said it in the episodes of Saraspectives that we recorded right after it happened. For me, the impact was maybe a lot more personal than I would have expected.
I agree.
And the thought that, you know, all of us are out here mourning what this may mean for Apple. Steve had a family, he had kids, he had a wife, and to think that the whole world was looking on and, you know, mourning the passing of a titan in the technology world, these folks, they just missed Steve. And so anytime anyone passes away around you, it kind of reminds you of how fragile life is. And I'll get off the sad horse now.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared.
It's like tiny nails in the air poke my lungs.
I start to cough.
Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
Today, one out of 13 children suffer from some form of asthma. accounting for nearly one-third of all emergency room visits.
I feel like I'm choking.
It's kind of like an elephant is on my chest.
A little whistle sound comes out when I breathe.
But while your child may suffer from asthma, asthma doesn't have to make your child suffer. There are simple ways you can prevent your child's next attack. To learn more, call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS. That's 1-866-662-8822. Log on to www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
There's some rumors about what Apple's doing, because there's always rumors about what Apple's doing. And first rumor, maybe iPad 3 coming in March. Could be
later. I'm not
sure
that that could fall into the rumors category, considering that we have a couple of years of history to kind of go on. And we know that the iPad shows up around this time of year. To me, that kind of seems like a logical conclusion. But Apple's a fickle creature. You never know, I guess.
Yeah, well, apart from iPhone releasing late last year, they're pretty consistent. So I think a March release for the iPad's probably a pretty good bet.
And along with the rumor that it's going to come out in March, there are rumors about what it's going to include, and potentially a quad-core processor. There are rumors that it's going to have a Retina display, just like the iPhones do. Also, that it's going to possibly come in multiple versions, such as a less expensive version and a more expensive version. I had heard a rumor that they were toying with the idea of coming out with a smaller iPad, but I don't think that one's really going to happen.
I don't know. I have a hard time believing that Apple's going to do something with a lesser iPad model and a greater iPad model, for lack of a better term. Apple's never competed on price, ever, and I don't really see why they would start now.
Yeah, I agree.
I also don't believe that we'll see a different sized iPad or them fragment their product line in that kind of way, mostly because you'll have a situation where developers will have to code for so many different screen sizes and different resolutions that it'll become progressively more difficult for developers to keep up with the different versions that are hanging around. And while some of that is inevitable with the change in just in technology in general, I think that you'll see Apple do everything they can to minimize that. That's part of the reason why I don't see a Retina display on the iPad. The cost involved in producing higher density pixel displays is significant. And with a device the size of the iPad, that would not be a negligible amount. And while Apple is better able to handle that because of their larger than life profit margin, I kind of doubt that we'll see that this soon. My guess is that if we see a Retina display, it won't be till next year. But I could be wrong. I do think, however, that we will see LTE this year. The iPad is at a place where if they put a quad-core chip in it and it becomes a huge gaming device and players like OnLive want to stream PC games to it or something like that, you'll see a shift towards more data-hungry activities. So given that the chipsets for LTE are small enough to go into the iPad now, I think that we'll see LTE. Whether we'll see LTE on the iPhone this year, I have my doubts about that. But if they manage to squeeze that in, I'll be a happy camper.
So another rumor that we have is that maybe iOS 5.1 will also be coming out at the same time as the iPad 3.
Again, not a huge stretch.
No, not a huge stretch. And obviously it's been in beta and developers have been working with it for months now. So I don't see that as a stretch, but we'll have to see. And the last rumor is that we're going to have Facebook support built in to our iOS devices. Now, I go back and forth on whether or not I actually buy this. There's that part of me that's like, Apple doesn't want anything to do with Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook and nonsense. But they actually did incorporate Twitter, so it's possible. And I know that people have been saying, well, how come I don't have Facebook built into things? I want Facebook to be connected with everybody.
I want Farmville.
Facebook's kind of a force that can't really be denied. Facebook's like the 800-pound gorilla in the room when it comes to social integration.
Yeah.
So I think that whether it's in iOS 5.1 or in iOS 6, Facebook will show up at some point. It's kind of inevitable at this point. So I would hazard to guess that there's truth to that rumor, but who knows when it's actually going to show up. Remember that developer builds and things that leak out about developer builds oftentimes have very little to do with what actually happens at the end of the day, because developer builds are just that. They're developer builds. They're meant for Apple to put forth things that may or may not stick around, and for third-party software developers to get their hands on things and see if what Apple's thinking is actually going to pan out for third-party apps. So people that follow the developer builds religiously tend to be disappointed at times because they think there's something coming and someone leaks a juicy little tidbit about code strings that they found and nothing ever comes of it. Remember, people saw code strings in iOS 4 for iChat being integrated into iOS, and have we seen it yet? No. Does it mean that I don't think we will? No, I do think we will eventually, but who knows when.
The AppleViz Hall of Fame has just started putting in the apps that have been inducted, and iBlink, as well as 12 other apps have already been inducted, and you can actually go to the AppleViz website and vote for next month's inductee. I think it's a pretty neat concept to have this Hall of Fame that kind of shows how certain app developers are really doing a fantastic job of making sure that their app is accessible. One of the ones that got inducted was Tweetlist Pro, which is the Twitter app that I use primarily, and it's pretty great because they're a company that has been listening to us and been utilizing our suggestions.
And by the way, I did acknowledge that very publicly their induction into the AppleViz Hall of Fame, so they are really beating the accessibility drum for us too, and that's fantastic.
I found it interesting that iBlink was inducted, not because the app's not accessible, of course, but the way I see the AppleViz Hall of Fame, it's kind of incumbent on us to nominate app developers who make their apps accessible sort of, what I want to say, not voluntarily, but they kind of go above and beyond, and to induct apps that were specifically designed for blind people by developers who are in the blindness community. I think while that's great, it sort of feels like preaching to the choir kind of thing.
Well, yeah, and it's expected from us. So I think if we weren't accessible, we would very rightly be soundly criticized.
We would throw rotten fruit and vegetables at you.
Yes.
And then we have a couple follow-up stories talking about last show we talked about Navigon and it being updated. It since has been updated again with some improvements. I will say that my experience with it is that it is not as accessible as it was in version 1, but it's much better than it was when it first came out as version 2. But there is some forum comments at the AppleViz website that you guys can read.
Yeah, I haven't gotten a chance to take it for a walk yet myself. I've just looked at the setup screen, which looked fine, but again, the proof of it is going to be in what it does when you're actually out walking with it, which I haven't had a chance to do.
One of the main components that you need to work with, the map manager, doesn't let you deselect or select maps.
Yes, it does.
Wait, to select specific maps to download?
Yeah.
It definitely does.
It doesn't work for me.
Oh, that's weird.
I can either select them all or select none of them, but seems to me that tapping on them individually doesn't allow you to change.
No, it definitely did for me.
It is possible, I guess, that I've got an older version and I just haven't gotten the update.
Yeah, I would check and make sure that you don't have an update. That's interesting, Peter.
I was irritated.
I bet.
To say the least.
I'm sure you were, yes. It definitely selected the maps that I wanted and just downloaded the ones that I wanted.
Interesting. Color me confused.
We also have a story talking about the fact that Sprint is removing Carrier IQ. As we discussed in our last show, Carrier IQ is the concept that basically your phone is tracking every single little thing that you do, which is creepy and should be illegal because nobody should have the right to spy on every tap that I make on my phone. And if Carrier IQ, the company, goes out of business because us consumers found out what they were really doing, then I say, too bad.
What they forgot to mention is while they were removing Carrier IQ, they were installing the follow-up to it without telling you.
No, of course, yes! It's all a part of their master plan! And finally, there is a great article which I found fascinating because I've been in this delusion this whole time that if I take apps out of my app switcher that I'm actually helping my phone work better. Apparently, that's all a bunch of lies.
Before we debunk the myth, let me state for the record that there are some very limited circumstances under which killing an application in the app switcher can improve a situation for you.
Okay.
That is only if the application is doing something in the background, such as monitoring your location or playing audio or one of the other things that applications are allowed to do in the background that you need to stop.
Like mail, for instance.
Well, you can't turn mail off. You can kill mail from the app switcher, but it's still running.
But it'll at least quit polling your mailbox.
It will not.
No.
Oh?
No. No.
I don't know where people get the idea that they can kill a system-level application on the iPhone and have it not working.
I thought that it did, but then again, I don't have my mail automatically checking.
No,
because I don't want it to.
It doesn't. It doesn't. Try to set your mail to push sometime, kill it from the app switcher, and then send yourself a message. You'll get it. It'll come.
I sit corrected.
For third-party applications that are doing things in the background, you can terminate them, and that may help you. But if you're talking about something like Facebook or tweet list or something like that, anything that's not actively doing anything in the background, those apps are suspended when they are not in the foreground. They can only request a certain amount of time to do something in the background, and that period is about 10 minutes. But other than that, apps are mandated to be frozen. They're either taken out of memory or their closed state is stored in memory for when you need to open them again. And iOS handles memory management pretty well on its own. So the people that say, hey, you can save battery by killing all your apps, you're just wasting your battery by sitting there double tapping 40 apps to close them.
Yeah, but it makes you feel better.
Hey, you know, if the placebo effect is what you're going for, I guess, you know, hey, don't let me stop you from sitting there tapping on all those applications, but I'm going to sit there and laugh at you while you're doing it.
Well, Peter, then you would have been laughing at me this whole entire time because I have been doing that a lot.
I didn't know it. See, you never told me you did that. Otherwise, you know, we would have had the conversation offline where I would have been like, yeah, that's kind of a waste of time.
You know, I think the reality of the situation is just that ever since I updated to iOS 5 with my 3GS, it's been showing me that it's an old lady that needs to be put out to pasture, and I'm asking it to do too much.
Hey, you won't get any argument from me. This is coming from the guy that gets the new phone every year, so.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of new phones.
Let's talk about any cool apps that we've been playing with since our last show. Buddy, do you want to start?
Yeah, I've been playing with a new app. It's called the iPhone 4S.
Yeah.
I decided that I hated not being able to do things with my phone more than I hated long-term contracts.
Come to the dark side.
Yeah, so after 3 months with an iPhone being used basically as a glorified iPod Touch, I called Sprint up right after Christmas and got myself a spanking new iPhone 4S, and it's wonderful. Now, I will say that Sprint's 3G network does seem to drop out more than the AT&T one did. I couldn't as reliably stream with it. For example, I am noticing that, but for my needs and as much as I'm actually on somewhere with a known Wi-Fi network like my house, It's not a huge deal for me.
I think one of the things people forget is that Verizon and Sprint are using a different network technology than AT&T.
True.
So data access on Sprint and Verizon is going to be slower than it would be on a good signal AT&T connection. Now, I say good signal AT&T connection because those are kind of hard to come by lots of times. But Verizon and Sprint use CDMA, which is technically EVDO, Revision A, but CDMA data technology is behind the curve when it comes to 3G data technologies. I think that if we get LTE on the iPhone soon, hopefully sooner rather than later, but probably later, we'll see that field kind of even out quite a bit. Verizon's LTE is ridiculously fast, and I assume that AT&T's version of that will be as good where you have good coverage.
Okay, I'm not going to say anything about what AT&T would say about their being hampered in their ability to expand by not being allowed to buy T-Mobile.
Oh, cry me a river.
So, Peter, do you have any apps that you've been playing with?
No, I'm a boring guy when it comes to that sort of stuff. I'm not the kind that goes out and buys every new app that comes out on the store.
No, you just buy a whole new phone.
Yeah, I'm broke because I buy new phones and new computers all the time.
I actually just got a new app that I found out about thanks to somebody on Twitter. I had been searching for months and months and months now for an app that will let me see what's on television. And I don't have fancy cable or anything like that. But sometimes I want to know, is my show new? And is it worth it for me to turn it on? Or is there a new show that I don't know about? And for a little while, I had ITV, and then it got updated, and then it got broken. And so I've been searching with no luck whatsoever. And so I came across this tweet from somebody, and the app is called, once it got shortened, it's called Digit on my iPhone, and it's free. It's actually a part of the app that goes with this universal remote thing, but you don't need the universal remote. But, you know, letting it know where I was and what kind of provider I had was super simple. And the layout's really easy to navigate, and it's just easy. And I hope that it stays accessible. So if you're into TV or you want to know what's on and you're tired of asking somebody or tired of Googling it on the web, then try this out. One more thing I want to mention. It's not an app, but I was very excited to go to YouTube the other day where somebody had linked to a video. And on my Mac, I had access to the controls. I could actually pause the video. It was pretty cool. So YouTube is switching over to HTML5, and Flash is going to go away someday, hopefully very soon.
Oh, I did also want to mention that I'm very excited about getting, Pete ordered them too, but we don't know when they're going to actually ship. But the Aftershocks headphones, which play sound through your cheekbones.
Creepy.
Perhaps, but it should be interesting.
The interesting thing is going to be how they sound with music, because they're supposed to be able to play music too. And I've only ever heard this bone conduction technology as it relates to communications gear. The SWAT team here locally uses them, and I've gotten to play with them and hear them. And the sound is... I have a hard time describing it, but it's very strange. It doesn't sound like headphones that you would put in your ears. I'm hopeful, though, because I'm a runner, and as things stand now, I cannot run and listen to music while I'm running. That could be a potentially lethal combination for me, so I just don't do it. So it would be nice to have my ears free and still be able to hear some tunes to distract me from the fact that I can't breathe.
I'm thinking, too, that this is going to be a really good thing for people who need to use their talking GPS programs while out and about.
Yeah.
Because sometimes the iPhone speaker isn't the easiest thing in the world to hear.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially if it's in a case. Speaking of which, we have an iReport.
Hi, my name is Macy McLean. I just recently got an iPhone 4S. I'm looking for a protective but not very bulky case. Do you guys have any suggestions? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
I don't have any specific ones, although I understand that the OtterBox makes a low-profile case. Of course, it's not going to be as protective as the Defender, for example, but it's also probably not nearly as boxy and ugly. Anyone else have any comments on that?
Well, you didn't ask for much, Macy, but the only one that I know of is the OtterBox case that we just mentioned, and we'll make sure and have a link to that in the show notes. But obviously the most protective case are the Defender and their ilk. And the reason for that is that they have a couple of layers and different things on them. So they tend to be a little bit thick and probably not the cutest cases in the world. What about you, Lena?
I've been really happy with my... It's just a basic silicone case and collects hair. But other than that, it's been great. And I've dropped it a couple times, but no damage that I've seen. So I think... If I were going to choose a case, I would choose a silicone or a flexible plastic over hard plastic, but that's just me.
Silicone or a flexible plastic is going to be better because it's going to be able to absorb a little bit more of a shock.
Yeah, exactly.
And when you're talking about dropping your phone, shock is really your biggest enemy, especially with the glass panels.
Yes, indeed. So, we want to remind everybody that ATIA Orlando is coming up next week. Please be listening in for coverage of that. And we also want to let you know that next month we will be sure to let you know our thoughts and responses to the event that Apple is doing on the 19th and potentially an event that talks about the iPad, but that hasn't been set in stone, so we'll see.
That's all we had for this episode. I want to thank everybody for listening. I'm Peter Bosley, and you can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/pbosley. That's P-B-O-S-S-L-E-Y.
And I'm Buddy Brannon. You'll find me on Twitter as well at twitter.com/bbrannon. That's B-B-R-A-N-N-A-N.
And you can find me, Alina Roberts, on Twitter at Blind Perspective. That's B-L-I-N-D-P-E-R-S-P-E-C-T-I-V.
Without the E. You can follow Triple Click Home's official Twitter feed at twitter.com/tripleclickhome, or you can leave us an iReport for next time from iBlink Radio.
You can call us on the Blab line at 866-997-BLAB, that's 2522, or you can visit our official website at tripleclickhome.com, and email us at resources@serotalk.com.
And please remember to subscribe to the podcast if you like. We're on iTunes.